This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
Dr. Chris Valdez is in the studios from Richland Community College. Are you an Adele fan?
You know, I'm not an Adele fan. I'm a Las Vegas fan. I have a son and two grandchildren in Vegas. And my son, who's a police officer, worked Fremont Street for about 15 years.
Really?
And so anything that...
That's got to be an interesting police department. I mean, I would just think because you're not... There's no hometown crowd.
Yeah. Anything that you've heard about Fremont Street is true and probably worse. The crazy stuff. You know, I think I told him at one time to stop telling me stories because it's like, that didn't happen. It's like, oh yeah, that happened.
I would imagine. It's just you got all the weirdness from all around the world coming there full time. I didn't know that. So you like Vegas? Where do you guys like to stay?
Well, you know, we have grandkids now. So we stay as close to the grandkids as possible. We haven't been on the Strip in probably, you know, 5 years.
Because I got you.
There's, for us, we're getting older, I guess. There's way too much fun bouncing with the
grandson. No, I get it. Yeah. I get it. All right. So I didn't know you had Las Vegas connections. See how all that works out, Nick. It's a small world. All right. So we are, the numbers came out yesterday from the health department. Not good. As there were 2,572 new positive cases and 6 deaths. The youngest male in his 40s, the oldest a female in her 80s, and a little bit of everything in between. I know you guys are watching this as a campus, as you know, some place where thousands of people come, employees and students. What's your take on where we are as a county right now?
Well, you know, it is both shocking for me. You know, I was in a last week with health professionals, and somewhat you know, matter of factly, the individual said, you know, we're this level and we've quadrupled this of inpatient folks and people on ventilators, and you know, deaths will follow. And I read a article just, well, I guess I read the headline this morning, wasn't really interested in the article, about who's dying now of COVID. It's mm-hmm. It's so interesting how desensitized we have become to death. And
some people have been that way from the get-go. It's hard. You look at Macon County, where we have about a 50% vaccination rate versus the state, which is more like 87% versus the country. It's how people have a hard time understanding the way the world works. I mean, the vast people in this country have been vaccinated.
Right.
But we live in an area where half have not.
Yeah. Well, if I'd be so bold to say, many of the folks who are saying don't get vaccinated are vaccinated. And, you know, that's why...
Yeah, a lot of the politicians.
Yeah, maybe that's why we are 3 years into it now and still in the same challenges that we were in 2020. It's amazing to me, Brian, and it's very sobering.
You know, what's really weird is yesterday I read a story literally during the George W. Bush administration, and they had... put a U.S. plan together for this kind of pandemic. The CDC and all these agencies were somebody finally took this seriously. And I mean, there was plans for the federal government, the state government, down to locals, you know, and they were talking about, it was a 396 page pandemic document. And this goes to 2005. And the World Health Organization, United Nations, all these folks involved, detecting outbreaks, stockpiling vaccines, emergency plans in place. And then we just got caught sort of like red. I still can't believe that we weren't prepared as a country to deal with the initial outbreak. And then here we are 2 years later, still struggling to deal with it. Now it's testing. You guys have all the tests in the world. They're struggling everywhere else in this country, even to provide tests.
Yeah, it is very crazy. You know, our vaccination rate at Richland, low age, we are providing tests not only to our students and faculty and staff, but also to the community. That's open 5 days a week from 9 to 5:30, and then half a day on Saturday. You know, if you're feeling ill, get tested. We want to be a service to this community. And I think I speak for many people when I say I'm tired of having to worry about loved ones getting sick and maybe passing.
Oh, and the unbelievable thing in this Bush document, I mean, I say he didn't, you know, he was the president then, but they were operating under the assumption that this kind of pandemic, using the 1918 flu, saying that 90 million Americans would be taken sick and worst case scenario, 2 million people would die. We are almost to that million level of this pandemic and people still act like it's not true. I mean, how can you lose almost a million people? in this country and still not take it seriously.
Right. And you know, the age of individuals becoming sick and passing is lowering every day. I remember early on people said, well, those people are either ill or old and they're going to likely pass.
Yeah, and
anyway,
they were the weakest to this, and it ran through nursing homes and all those things. And we've learned, certainly, you guys have learned as a campus, as everyone else has had to adjust and pivot, how to do things in a safer way.
Right, and we're all forced to do that, but in many ways, Brian, you know, we're happy to do it. If it means a greater good for the community, it means more people will survive this horrible virus, we're more than willing to do that.
Yeah, and even on the surface level of just staying open, you have to be smart.
Yeah, it's a small sacrifice as a institution, as an individual. It's a small sacrifice.
No doubt about it. All right, so tell me, the semester is getting geared up. You guys have a lot of things happening between now and the summer. How important has your staff been, you know, in all this? I mean, we think about institutions, and sometimes culturally they're adverse to change. I mean, that's just sort of the natural human thing. But you guys, I can't think of, outside of healthcare and some other first responders, education has had, you know, been thrown the biggest curveball maybe of all. How have your staff dealt with that over the last 2 years?
You know, and not to necessarily compare it to healthcare workers, but our staff they're overworked. You know, they're feeling anxious. They have families as well. They have children in the school system. They have spouses and partners who are out in the community, and it is difficult. You know, we have just 2% less than what number of students than we did last year, but we're down almost 12% in credit hours. People are tired, so we're getting as many students. They're not enrolling as many courses, but we still have to serve those folks. You know, we've done as much as we can to support our staff. You know, one of the things that they are leading the change on is saying, hey, we need more flexibility. You hear this work-life balance challenge with not only this generation, but with individuals who are so tired from working every day and then, you know, being concerned about exposure and all those kind of things. You know, the students in your class, are they putting you at risk? You know, those kind of things that they just over time wear on people.
They do. And I know a lot of this sort of came down to like this debate about the Chicago Teachers Union versus the mayor. But if you're, you know, a healthy person, you're in a classroom teaching, but you got a husband or a wife or spouse that's, you know, immunosuppressed. I mean, there, all this stuff factors into being a human being.
Right. Yeah. And you can't separate and say, okay, now I'm in the classroom, I'm not going to worry about my family or my child or my uncle.
And the same thing for all those students and every individual story that's in there. It's what makes it so difficult.
Right. Yeah, you know, and those are the kind of things that and we still do, you know, we cherish those kind of things, but they bring a level of anxiety and concern now that is unprecedented. We just haven't seen that before. We shouldn't be, you know, worried about all these other external happenings, and we're trying to provide a great learning environment for students. It's a challenge.
All right, let's talk a little bit about scholarships that are available. We've talked a number of times about Richland being, you know, the pathway to careers. And I think sometimes people just think, well, oh, I can't afford it, or I'm not in a position to do it. I'm stunned, you know, even knowing what I know, to learn every day about just the opportunities that are out there. And I don't believe that there's anyone in this community from any level of anything that cannot find a way through Richland Community College.
Yeah. If concern, and typically, Brian, that is the largest concern for folks when they're looking at post-secondary education, is how much is it going to cost? Can I afford it? We have, in the last 3 years, nearly $1 million in scholarships for credit students. We've provided stipend scholarships for non-credit students, especially in our healthcare pathways, which, you know, we're going to talk a bunch more about that in the coming weeks. But individuals can come receive a training for a CNA or a phlebotomist, and they can move all the way through to become an LPN or RN. We just talked about how stressful those jobs are and how difficult it is for individuals to maintain that. So we need to supply that at a greater level.
The upside of that, though, is the demand and the pay is now maybe a little bit more what it should be. Also in the news this last week, we had the folks from Wolf on partnering with ADM and this whole Illinois Industrial Carbon Cap, which you guys are a big part of, the sequestration center out there. How cool is that? I mean, I remember when the U.S. Department of Energy, you know, and all the partners were here in town, and we got a chance to tour all of that and making an environment. You know, Richland is it's at the cutting edge of all of this.
Well, you know, it'll be very interesting for us because we have the National Sequestration Station, our center for education on campus. We've been continuing to work through that curriculum and having individuals who are interested. And I think that the interest is going to go up. It's a great thing for our environment. ADM has been a fantastic leader. And now that they're finding partners, there's going to be all kinds of opportunity for students who are interested in that area.
All right. Well, did you know when you came to Richland, did you have any idea about any of this?
No, first of all, I had to look up sequestration.
Just find out what it was. Listen, we all did when we were first invited out. So I'm thankful there were other people from the U.S. Department of Energy and all of those folks, the National Energy Technology Laboratory. They kind of knew what they were doing. But, you know, it's hard to believe sometimes. I think, you know, you're sitting here in Decatur, Illinois, in the middle of the state, in the middle of the country, doing this kind of cutting edge thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting way. You've been here now for 5.5 years, and you just become used to those things. But when I came, you know, we had sequestration station, we had Farm Progress. No one knows Farm Progress until you've experienced it. I mean, that was like, oh, yeah, I can deal with that. That's a pretty cool deal. And then you see
you
how
see
big it.
It
is.
Right. Yeah. And you see all the money, and that's an amazing thing. So what are you thinking about? You know, put your futurist hat on. You know, what is the campus, what does Richland Community College look like in 5 years?
You know, we're going to continue to serve more diverse populations. We're going to continue to serve them in more diverse ways. Just 3 years ago, our average age was like 20, it's like 22. 3 years ago, two out of every three of our students were part-time. Now, three out of every four, 75% of our students are part-time. So that means they are doing all kinds of things other than college. And so we have to look at them about wraparound services, those kind of things, because college isn't their main focus. Even though they have that dream of continuing on and, you know, maybe getting a four-year degree, or maybe stopping at the two-year level, maybe even going beyond that, they're doing that while they're doing all these other things like being a spouse, being a worker, being a homeowner, those kind of things. And so that creates additional challenges. I think that's going to be one of the biggest things for us is how do we learn to serve people who are just doing this in their spare time?
Yeah, but see, I think that you guys are thinking outside the box there. And I think companies, you know, whether it's a business plan for a company like ours or whether it's education in your field, the idea that you can do it the way you've always done it is just so expired.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of institutions aren't getting that. They're not understanding that. They're trying to hire people the same way they've always hired them. They're expecting kids to come and go my four-year path. I just think that's changed forever.
Yeah, it has. You know, we had someone come in and ask us about our 10-year plan. It's like, you know, we're fortunate to have two-year plans because 10-year plan is not going to work for us because things are going to change in 18 months.
Yeah, even the way you master plan something has changed dramatically in a short window of time. And that's okay. It's all good. I think what COVID, on the other side of this, whenever we are truly on the other side of this, there's going to be good things that were developed because of this horrible thing we've gone through, meaning things have been accelerated, thought process has been accelerated, doing things in a different way is a good thing.
Yeah, and it requires us to be a bit more risk, able to commit to some risk because we have to change. We can't just say, well, let's wait to see how this cycle goes because the cycle will change us. And if we don't do that, we will lose out on students and this community will lose out populace in a workforce that will help us to thrive into the future.
All right. What about registering for classes? Is that still underway?
We actually started, you know, students can drop ad now, but we start our first day of classes was Thursday. So they've gotten 2 days in and now with the break, we're going to start up in earnest and looking forward to a great semester. You know, we have less students on campus. We have students taking fewer credits, but we're up and running. It's going to be better. We'll continue to do the workforce education, but we're committed to providing a great education. And if you weren't able to get in, we have some late start classes. Come talk to us, richland.edu, and we want to help you be successful if that's part of your plan.
All right. What's the average cost if you're taking a full load of classes for a year?
for a year. We're still $1,000. Tuition's probably about $1,500, $1,600, you know, depending on where you live, books and so forth. Books are becoming more affordable with open source. We talked about that before, how expensive they can be, but Richland is extremely affordable. If you're eligible for the Pell Grant, that will help you. We have scholarships. We have need-based grants from the state. There is a way for you to attend if you're interested. We'll help you.
Dr. Valdez, we appreciate it. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Chris Valdez from Richland Community College.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.